list. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. This is Corinne Fornari, and I'm here today, and we're going to have a fun show. We're going to be talking with Dr. Moshe Deko, and we're going to be talking about summertime. Just let me interrupt because I think he hasn't connected yet. He's calling me. Let me see now. Dr. Deko? Hi. Did you get your clearance?
Okay, so while Corinne Fornari gets her guests together, just wanted to announce that once again, this is WBAI New York, and the program that you're about to hear is Take Charge of Your Health, and this program is on every Thursday starting at 2 p.m. And if you appreciate what Corinne Fornari as well as Carol Peterson and whoever's guest is on that particular week, well, please consider becoming a financial supporter to this radio station by calling 212-209-2950 or go to give to WBAI.org online. That's 212-209-2950 or go to give to the number to WBAI.org online. And I believe Corinne is back to speaking to the listener audience. So take it away, Corinne.
Okay. So we're going to have hopefully a very interactive show today. We're going to be speaking about summertime and all the myths that are around and that are definitely abound, the excessive amounts of myths about how to take care of ourselves during the summer. And I am here with Dr. Moshe Deko. Dr. Deko?
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Okay. So let me see. We're still working on getting him connected. And so we're going to be here with him. He'll be with us.
Yeah, yeah. Corinne, why don't you continue on with the show, and I'll try to fix it over here on my end.
Thank you. I'd appreciate it. Thanks, Reggie. I always depend on you completely. We're also going to be asking you to join in because there's a lot of myths that we all carry. We'd love you to share how you approach summer and how and what you do to stay healthy during the summer. I know one thing that I do, and the number one thing that I do, is I move more. In the sun, I just feel better. I move more. I exercise more. And being out in the sun and exercise and in motion, what happens is I think clearer. I feel happier. And what we find is that the sunshine stimulates serotonin levels, so we feel happier, we feel calmer. We also know that exercise stimulates circulation, and stimulating the circulation to the brain helps us think better. So here we are, we're feeling better, we're thinking better, we're also increasing our energy, and we increase our energy through activity. That seems interesting. It's almost sounds counterintuitive, because you would think, well, if I'm more active and I exercise more, I'll be more tired. But in actuality, what happens when you're more active and you exercise more, you don't use up your energy. You don't use up your energy. You end up making more energy. So your body has more energy to share. And that's really been quite well proven. There have been many studies on exercise and what it does for the body and for the brain and for our ability to think and for even right down to our ability to take tests is improved by exercise. So there is more to talk about also. So right now, what about being in the sunshine? What about vitamin D and how that affects us? And we know that the majority of our vitamin D comes through food and generally through animal products. But yet, what we're finding out is that mushrooms are a very powerful source of vitamin D2. And when you go and expose yourself to the sunshine, vitamin D2 converts to active forms, and that active form becomes a vitamin D3. And so just by eating mushrooms, you can increase your vitamin D, which is incredible and essential for, one, brain health, for building muscle, for strengthening bones, for focus and memory, for immune health and active and aggressive immune cells. So here we are with vitamin D. It's like the magic molecule. It is called vitamin D, but really and truly, it's a pro-hormone. It is a pro-hormone. It is a precursor for the body to make hormones, as well as a precursor to stimulate immune cells when we are being invaded or there's an attempt to invade us with either bacteria or virus. So, the number to call in is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Give us a call. Let us hear what you think. Now, we've been told about the dangers of being in the sunshine. And Dr. Deckel?
Yes, my dear, I'm finally what? On. Technology at its best.
Oh, okay, well, here I was talking and talking. I'd love you to join. What do you think about vitamin D?
I think it's very essential. I mean, not too long we had a bout of COVID attacks, and the data shows clearly that those people with enough vitamin D on board never had any significant serious effect of the virus. The question we have is, what is enough vitamin D?
Exactly.
And as you're well aware, conventional medicine thinks that anything over 30, around 30 or more should be okay. We have a little different opinion. In my experience, a 75 to 100 level is much more adequate. And vitamin D is considered now more hormone than vitamin because it affects about 2,000 different genes. It's responsible for immune system. It's responsible for gut integrity, in addition to the classical vitamin, calcium absorption and calcium distribution, etc. So I think one of the incorrect notions that people have, and that's why I thought we should talk about it, and I hear it probably like you on a regular basis, is say, do you take vitamin D? Yeah, I take it in the winter, I don't take it in the summer. I said, why not? Well, because I go out and I have a nice day, and I said, okay. Well, I break the news to my patients who think that way, that I have a lot of patients who are very nicely tanned, still deficient vitamin D. So,
I was wondering, what do you think causes that? I've got a couple of theories in mind, but what do you think causes that? The tan should be an indicator that you're getting enough vitamin D to convert into a healthy level in your body. What do you think is changing that?
Well, I think that's a very good question. So let's look at how vitamin D is being produced. It's produced from cholesterol being exposed in the skin to ultraviolet light, in addition to some ability to get vitamin D through fish oil, etc., etc., etc. But it's small amounts. And for some reason, theoretically, if we are exposed to sun in the summer months, where the angle of the sun is such that actually enables the cholesterol to become vitamin D, we should be sufficient in that.
Exactly.
But for some reason we're not, and I do not have an answer for that. I don't know.
I've got a thought. I've got a thought about that. I remember Dr. Teitelbaum was on the radio, and
yes,
he lived in Hawaii. And he said that he does vitamin D levels on all his patients.
Right.
50% of the women, this is in Hawaii, 50% of the women coming to his office, these are health conscious people, were deficient. We're not talking low, we're talking deficient, vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
So where is that coming from? How can you be deficient in vitamin D when you live in Hawaii? I've got a couple of thoughts. One, it seems strange, and it might sound strange, but I think we shower too much, in that we're constantly, sometimes once or twice a day, washing all the oil off of our skin with very strong soaps. So the conversion of vitamin D takes place with the sun reacting on our sweat, on our sweat glands, on the oil being excreted from our skin. And that oil is then being reabsorbed into our bodies. But I think that we just don't have enough oil. We're so fanatical about being clean. I think that there's another reason why we don't have enough vitamin D, and you said it very directly, is that our cholesterol is being kept too low. So we don't have the ability to convert to vitamin D. And then the last one, and the last reason why, and we all understand this, is sunblocks. We all are smothering ourselves in this thick, deep sunblock that blocks out the ultraviolet light to our skin. So we're not making vitamin D with these heavy sunblocks that we're putting on our bodies. What do you think?
Well, I think you're right. I'd like to add to that the phobia of skin cancer. The phobia is being fueled by a lot of doctors, to the point that it's almost like, if you go in the sun, you're crazy because it's so dangerous. Well, let me explain. The sun can be dangerous, obviously. When you go out after a long winter into the sun without protection and you stay in the sun for 2 hours, guess what? You're going to have, depending on how much of your body is exposed, you can get 90% first or second degree burn. So the idea is to do small exposures, get your melanin going, get your protection and tan going. And unfortunately, you know, you have to be careful how much sun you're getting. And by the way, a lot of the sun doesn't have to be direct sun. It can be reflected from the water, from the sand, from the beach, etc. So we need sunlight. We really need sunlight. I mean, why do we have depression during the winter when we don't have to see the sun for 7 days? Obviously, we need sun. Not only the skin, the eyes need full spectrum sunlight. So I think that we need to kind of, okay, yes, the sun can be dangerous, but it's also necessary. Without it, there's no life. So I think that we need to find an equilibrium between, okay, I just need to get enough sun without overexposure, without getting an increased possibility of getting cancer, but at the same time, giving healthy dose of sunlight. And well, I agree with you also as far as the sunscreens. The sunscreens are the most dangerous things that they are because of all these chemicals. So my suggestion to my patients is very simple. If you see a sunscreen off the shelf, start reading the ingredients. If you start having difficulty reading the ingredient, you probably should leave it on the shelf and resort to a skin sunscreen that is natural, and they are. You can get it online. You can get. I'm sure you have your own preferred sunscreen natural that is working for us. And I think that we need to take it into consideration when we make our choices.
I lived in Central America for multiple years. And we used to, or at least I used to, get up early in the morning, walk on the beach, and just have this wonderful morning in the sun. And by 11:15 at the latest, I was in. We were making a big lunch, and then we'd all sit and we'd eat. And then at about 3 o'clock, we'd go back out again.
Mm-hmm.
And walk along the beach and walk to the village or whatever we were doing. But I think Rudyard Kipling wrote, only fools and Englishmen are out in the noonday sun. And he had it right, that the noonday sun isn't the best.
No.
But getting sun is. It's just like you said, very directly, moderation and how to do it. The same with my kids. They would get up early in the morning. They were on the beach. Lunchtime, they were off. And then around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they were back on the beach again, running and playing and boogie boarding and whatever kids do on the beach, little kids do on the beach. And I think that's a wonderful way to get sun.
Yeah, agreed.
That's using our own, common sense when we're dealing with sun. So the number to call, and we'd love you to join us, 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. I'm Corinne Fornari, and we're speaking with Dr. Moshe Dekel, who's a holistic doctor for, 30 years. And let's ask questions and get a holistic perspective on your questions. So where should we go next, Dr. Dekel?
Well, talking about the summer. So obviously summer is a good time for all of us to be outdoors, and, you know, especially up north, the winter is pretty brutal. So people stay in our little caves, etc. But, summertime, we actually don't have any excuses anymore of not having physical activity. And we don't have to be marathon runners, and we don't have to be triathletes or 30, 40 miles of bike riding. Let's go back to basics. How about walking? Walking a couple of miles a day. Okay. More and more I read it, and more and more I talk to experts, walking is probably one of the easiest and best activity we can do. And especially in the summer, let's add a little bit of swimming or water exercise, okay? My suggestion to patients and myself is do something you love. So it's not a chore, it's not a work, it's not a workout, it's what? I'm playing pickleball or tennis or walking or running, bicycling, okay? And if we do it in, you know, a few times a week, okay, according to data, holistic data, it's probably the best thing we can do for longevity, immune system, and staying healthy. So, you know, we really don't have any excuse in the summer. And your advice was very good as far as what? Noontime is probably, you know, between 12 and 3, is probably not a good idea to do extensive exercise activity out there because it's pretty hot. I mean, I'm in South Carolina now. We have about 90 degrees, okay? And it's now 2 to 20, okay? But comes 5 o'clock and we have light until what? 9:30 now? So do it early morning and do it in the afternoon. So in other words, if doing any kind of physical activity, it demands extra energy and suffering, quote unquote, because the heat is not easy to take, let's modify it. Let's do it earlier in the morning or later in the afternoon. But physical activity, you know, as you said this many times, said exercise and physical activity is probably the best guard against insulin resistance and diabetes. Not only that, but if we had a carb meal, now we're burning it. So we are protecting ourselves from what? Elevated blood sugar, insulin response, insulin resistant, inflammation, and every chronic disease comes as a result of that.
I'm going to bring up a study I saw and how they analyzed it today. And this is this is going way off subject, but they spoke about Ozempic, and that's that special drug that people are taking to lose weight. They can eat any way they want. They just eat it, and weight is just falling off of them because they're not really able to digest what they're eating, and people are getting these tremendous weight loss. And so they tried to compare that with berberine. And so they quoted a study, an extensive study done in China on berberine. And it didn't really show very significant weight loss. But I read the study, and what I saw in berberine was I saw lower inflammatory markers, the type for just inflammation and for cancer, lower cancer immune markers, lowered triglycerides, lowered overall cholesterol, and lowered blood sugar. No tremendous weight loss. It wasn't just something that happened, you could eat anything, but it was the most fabulous study. I couldn't believe it. And they were evaluating it was that it was not very good because it was not as good as Ozempic without even mentioning the negative side effects. I know this is off the subject, but I thought it was very important to mention it because you brought up about metabolic syndrome. But do you have something to say about that?
Oh, yeah, we could talk about this for a couple of hours, but let's try to kind of make it short to the point. I'm happy you brought up Ozempic, Wegovy, whatever you want to call it. It's the same thing. Just it's interesting because they have the same semaglutide, which is a peptide, but yet one of them has approval for weight loss, Wegovy, and the other one is, of course, for diabetic control. They respond, and we found out that it apparently is effective in helping people lose weight. Well, I'm sure you're aware of the fact that there's a shortage in the market of Wegovy. It's hard for them to keep up the demand.
And exactly.
And I so appreciate the fact that you mentioned that people think, you know what, I'm going to have anything I want on my plate, anytime, anywhere, any place. I'll take my Wegovy, I'll take my Ozempic, I'm going to have great life to 120 and die asleep. Well, I wish it was so simple. I really wish. And I'm sure I'm sure you also share my opinion on that. So if we talk about Ozempic and Wegovy as an approach, I have no problem with it. But somebody needs to lose a lot of weight to get them started on it. As they're changing their lifestyle, what they eat and how they exercise, and intermittent fasting, you know, keto light, whatever works for you. And then stop it and just continue with the lifestyle that will get you to the point that you want to weigh a certain weight, that you feel good, you look good, instead of trying to depend on medications that do not come without side effects. As usual, they try to minimize it. But if you read down below, I mean, some of it can be actually pretty serious.
So when you
bring berberine to the point that has no side effects, no nothing, it improves insulin resistance and glucose level and inflammatory levels, inflammatory like C-reactive protein, etc.
C-reactive protein, IL-6,
yep.
Tumor necrosis factor, all of them significantly mm-hmm. reduced.
Right.
So we're looking at cancer markers also.
Right. So obviously the choice is not difficult. But the problem is that everybody looks for what? Quick results and big results. And when they hear that you can lose X amount of pounds on Ozempic, a lot of people say, you know what? I'll go with what my best results are. Okay, but we need to understand that I wouldn't do it long term. I definitely don't suggest we look. But we don't know long term what it does, period.
No. And
why would you want to be
back when they stop taking it?
Yeah.
So people are wanting to be on it long term.
Well.
So.
It's only a question of time until we find out down the line that we did something that the body didn't like.
I think it would be lovely to eat a good diet and take berberine.
Right. Well,
I think it would be lovely to eat a good diet and take berberine.
Well, if you have a good diet, lifestyle, and take the berberine and some other supplements, you're not going to have a need for Ozempic or Wegovy.
You've got it. The number to call, 212-209-2877. Join us. Dr. Deckel, I wanted to talk a little bit about hydration. I see all these people walking around with these big jugs of water and they're drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking. Is that the best way to get hydrated?
Well, it's a good start. And when you say drinking, I know you don't mean alcohol. I mean,
the bottles.
Well, listen, the summer also is conducive to what? To parties and 4th of July and Labor Day and whole thing. And you know, going into alcohol, of course, it's a social habit. But actually, alcohol dehydrates us, right?
Uh-huh.
So we have to be careful with that. But to go back to your original statement, is that enough? It's a good start, but it's not enough if you're outdoors really sweating and losing salt. We absolutely, in my opinion, need to replenish salt, because if we don't, we are going to get dehydrated. The water is not going to be able to be held within the circulation and within the cells. And yeah, you're going to drink a gallon, you're going to pee a gallon, and before you know it, you just start at the same place. In addition to which, if you're a coffee drinker, well, coffee is diuretic, dehydrator. Well, how many of us are actually taking diuretics, right? For blood pressure, for a variety of things. I mean, today I saw a patient that somebody prescribed diuretics for, guess what? Ringing in the ears, tinnitus, no matter how you
are. Whoa.
Oh, yeah. exactly my reaction. Really?
One.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that works.
I didn't either.
It doesn't.
I didn't think so.
Okay. So, and then you say, okay, how much water do we need to take? Well, it depends on your activity. If you're outdoor working, construction or landscaping or whatever, especially here down south, boy, you probably need a gallon and a half of water. But guess what? If you don't take salt pills, you can faint because of loss of electrolytes.
Yeah. Okay. When my brother was in football practice in Southern California, and they used to give the kids salt pills. But I also heard this today, and then we have a listener who just called in. I heard today that Tom Brady never drinks water, straight water. He always puts electrolyte drops.
Okay. Right.
And that's not, you know, Gatorade, all sugar and chemicals or any of that. Those are electrolyte drops, 1, 2, 3, or 4, depending on, and that's what he drinks. He never drinks straight water. And when you're just like you said, when you're exercising heavily, you need to watch and get adequate salt, but also a complete balance of electrolytes.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we go to the listener? Hi, you're live on BAI. Your name, please. Whoops. Hello?
Caller, you're on the air. Well, it looks like they're not there.
Okay. Well, the number to call, 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. We'd love to hear from you. So what next, Dr. Deckel, for summer? We talked about vitamin
D. Yeah.
We talked about hydration. We talked a little bit about salt replacement. People are so afraid of salt. Oh,
yeah.
I'm going to swell. So how do you balance that, Dr. Deckel?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that connection was poor. Say it again, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. People are so afraid of salt. They're so worried that they're going to swell with salt. How do we balance that?
That's an excellent question. And you're absolutely correct, because, again, what we're having is we're having a heavy emphasis on salt restriction, especially by conventional medicine, that a lot of people think the salt is bad for them. Well, sea salt, again, commercial salt I will not touch, which is NaCl, sodium chloride. Okay. When you get any food that man-made or processed, etc., when you look at the ingredient, you see salt or you see Na. Okay. That is what is not good for us. Okay. But sea salt contains about 86 different minerals in the right concentration because it comes from HNCs. And that, I tell my patient, need at least a quarter to half a teaspoon to a teaspoon, at least a teaspoon, depending on their activity. If they're outdoors, they need much more than that. So the sea salt does not cause high blood pressure. It does not. The sodium in food does. Regular salt, commercial salt, does. Okay? So we need to distinguish between the quote-unquote bad salt and the good salt. You say, what's a good salt? Any salt that has been on our table that used to be an HNC. It can be Celtic salt, rock salt, Himalayan salt, anything like that. It's absolutely fine. Okay. And I absolutely agree with you. There's almost like a fear of salt. I mean, let's go into antiquity. I mean, thousands of years ago, salt used to be traded for gold.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Salt.
For a reason.
Salt of the earth. You're called the salt of the earth. Or they were paid with salt.
Yeah.
And that was their salary because it was so important for health.
Right. And farmers put rock salt for livestock in the field. And guess what? You can see cows and other livestock going to this rock salt and lick it. Because they know. They need it.
Uh-huh.
So why are we different? We're not. We're just getting a lot of misinformation. And I think that the information that we're giving to people, at least open the discussion. Okay? Do your own research. Read about it. I'm not saying, you know, we're talking about the gospel here, but Come talk for yourself.
Uh-huh. Dr. Brownstein wrote a wonderful book on salt, explaining it thoroughly and how our bodies need it and how it's utilized in the body. It would be worth looking at. It's not that large or difficult to read, but it will give you a totally different perspective on hydration, on salt, and what we need in our bodies to balance our bodies. But what about sweating? When summertime, there's a lot of sweating. Mm-hmm. Are we losing a lot of minerals when we sweat? Are we losing toxins when we sweat?
You do. Yet it's a little bit of paradoxical, because sweating is very important phenomenon. Number one, regulate our body heat. Okay. Number two, it's your major detoxification pathway. In other words, the skin is one of the elimination channels, very important one. Okay. So sweating in the summer, especially when we do any kind of activity, it's absolutely very healthy as long as we replenish the loss of water and the loss of minerals.
Uh-huh.
You know? So I encourage that. I mean, in the winter, get in the sauna. You want to sweat. That's what I do. Okay. And sitting in a 140-degree sauna, infrared sauna, for 20 minutes, you're sweating plenty, and you know that through the sweat, we are losing toxicity, toxins, especially chemicals that the body loves to get rid of. So don't be afraid of sweating, number one. Number two, I would not use antiperspirant to stop sweating. I don't think it's a good idea. You know, we can use natural deodorants if you want. You can use actually use rock salt to
exactly
prevent odor. Rock salt. Yes.
That they sell, that you use as an antiperspirant, and can be quite effective. And nice, actually. They put a little fragrance in it, and there you go.
Right.
A rock salt. You know, and then, go on.
Once in a while, you probably hear patients, you know, I sweat a lot. I oversweat under your arm. I oversweat my feet, my hands, et cetera, et cetera. What can we do about that? Well, I said, tell you what. Your body is really trying to detoxify, and that's why it's sweating. So how about if you got yourself into the sauna? Now you have the entire surface of your skin being utilized to get rid of toxicity. Then the body doesn't have to concentrate the sweat through the underarms. And another point that we're not too happy about sweating from. And guess what? They do it and they get better. Don't be afraid of sweating. Regulate sweating.
Uh-huh. That's very interesting, because that is and has been a problem that I've heard of. And so the solution is, and that is to get people to sweat more, but total yes. body sweating.
But what conventional medicine actually advocate what? It's Botox.
And
to the underarm.
Perspirant.
It's crazy. I mean, I have no problem with Botox or beauty, et cetera. It's fine. I have no problem with that. But you're actually actively telling the body not to sweat. Why not tell the body, hey, sweat. You have an entire surface, and then you don't have to sweat under your arms. Try that for a change.
Uh-huh. Sounds good to me. Mm-hmm. So the number to call, 212-209-2877. And we're going to be here for about 15 more minutes. And we'd love to hear from you and hear any suggestions you might have. Is summer a good time to detox, Dr. Deckel?
I'm sorry, summer's what?
Is summer a good time to detox?
Why not? And it's a very, very important question, because when people talk about or learn about detoxification and they understand how important it is, some of us or some of them actually not aware that improper detox can have some consequences, okay? Because again, we have five elimination channels, which is going to be the liver, the gut, the kidneys, the skin, and the lungs, that have a certain ability to get those toxicity out. Because detox, that means what? Get the sediment back in solution and get it out.
Exactly.
But if for whatever reason we are not able to get it out through the channels, and we'll get some side effects of not feeling well, of maybe Alzheimer, or a variety of the various reactions that are not so pleasant. So we need to use caution, in my opinion, detox, especially with people who are compromised. People don't have enough energy. People who are underactive thyroid, stressed adrenals, etc. We have to be, in my opinion, very careful, and I would definitely use it cautiously and gingerly at the beginning before I bless the body with, okay, take this for detox, because at that point you might have a little bit unpleasant surprise. So I think detox is great. I mean, there's a couple of good books about it, and one of them is actually called Detox or Die. So what you raised is absolutely important, but we want to make sure that people do it correctly. What do you think about that?
What I see in my office is that when, I've literally had a woman walking down the hallway to get in my office and pass out.
Uh-huh.
Literally, we're all rushing to grab her as she's falling she's coming into an appointment.
Wow.
And she was detoxing. And what happens is that when people think of detoxing, quite often they're too aggressive. They don't understand that if they really need a serious detox, it should be a little bit slower and it should be well supported. Mm-hmm. You know, our enzymes have to be supported. And how do we do that? With clean proteins. What are enzymes anyway? They're proteins that are being activated by vitamins and minerals. So if you're not adding that to your body, you're really not going to be able to detox. You're not going to be able to, the dumping and what you're doing, it all goes to the liver. And the liver then has to respond. And if the liver doesn't have enough energy or enough nutrients to respond, all that just becomes a backup in the system. So you're absorbing your toxins twice. Once when you absorb them the first time, then you're pulling them out of your system, putting them into your liver, and then they're being reabsorbed again from the bowel because they're not moving. So when we think of detox, it's not just one thing. We have to think of our bowels and get our bowels moving regularly, because that's one of the, you said very clearly, one of the detox organs in the body is the bowel. So we want that working, because that's a little train all the way out the body to get rid of the toxins that the liver dumps into it. We also want to think about our breath and breathing. We want to close our mouth and breathe through our nose and breathe deep into our lungs and then back out again. And that is augmented with exercise. We want to be able to sweat also and not have all our sweat glands blocked. We want to hydrate adequately. So there's a whole process. I remember seeing a documentary, and they went to blue zones, and they were interviewing people that were older than 100 years old. And so they followed one of the people that was, I think, 110 or 112 throughout their day, and she lived in a village up in the hills in Sardinia. So she got up in the morning, she walked up this pathway, up these stairs to the top of the village, and got herself some bread, and then walked down and made a little breakfast, a little coffee and with some fresh bread. And then she had to get lunch, and she walked up these stairs and then walked down. And then she wanted to visit her friend. And then she walked over there and up the stairs to the house. And it was this continuous motion. And it was really wonderful to watch, to see that in action and how she was able to move in that way. Guess what? We got three callers. So I'm going to go right to the callers, Dr. Dekla. Hi. You're live on BAI. Your name, please.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question, I want to go back to the issue about vitamin D, because I know I went and my skin tagged and everything, and when my doctor did a vitamin D level, it was low. He couldn't believe. Jose, obviously you can. Your vitamin D should have gone up, and it isn't. It was, like you said, deficient. But I disagree with your theory, and I'm gonna tell you the actual theory. I think is kind of being avoided. It has to do with pollution. The jets that are flying. They see a jet flying from New York to the Caribbean. It's about a million. It's about the pollution of a million cars, and that pollution in the air, I believe, is blocking the rays that stimulate vitamin D growth, and that's the reason everybody's deficient or low on vitamin D. Not so much what they're eating; it's just the if you look at the increase of flights, and that's what it is. It's all that fumes up there blocking the essential sun rays that stimulate vitamin D growth.
Look at Hawaii. Hawaii is in the middle of the ocean. So
pollution.
With the wind blowing constantly.
Pollution is everywhere. Pollution is, how many people fly to Hawaii?
Mm-hmm. Well,
millions. How many flights over Hawaii? Millions. It is pollution. Find somebody to do a study.
Yeah, okay. A point well taken. And you may have a very good explanation for that. As far as pollution, it's actually interfere with ultraviolet light, actually converting the cholesterol into vitamin D. But let's put this aside of why, okay? Let's deal with the fact. The fact is that we're walking around with low vitamin D. So the question that I have as a practical solution is, how do I increase my vitamin D in my patients? Okay, so sunshine is only one of them, and the rest of it, in my opinion, should be supplementation. And the supplementation that I prescribe to my patient usually is in the range of 10,000 units a day, okay? Where conventional medicine is prescribing 1,000 or 500, I find it's totally ineffective. So we need to address how much we are offering our patients, and we do it by, okay, let's get you on a 10,000, let's repeat it. I rarely see any vitamin D more than 100. And if it is, I cut it down to 5,000. Or if you want to be conservative, start at 5,000 international units. By the way, with vitamin K2, because it's also important, check it again. And if it's between 75 and 100, right, you're in the right place. But if not, I will increase it. Now, there are some patients that even with 10,000 are still not getting the right vitamin D, which means what?
Uh-huh.
Lack of absorption. They don't absorb from the gut. So I suggest have it with what? Have it with fatty foods. And if it's still not available, then I would do it vitamin D under the tongue, directly into the circulation, directly into the body, and also a cream. Get it through the skin. So just because we take in what we think is the right amount, we need to check it to make sure that we are getting the right amount in a blood level.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. And the next caller, hello, you're live on BAI. Hello?
Caller, you're on the air.
Well,
all right, let's try this one.
I think I heard someone, no? Okay, hi, you're live on BAI.
No.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Perfectly.
Yes, thank you. My question is, I know several years ago I heard about a book that I don't have and haven't read. It's called You're Not Sick, You're Thirsty. And in hearing some discussion around it, it was taken water with salt. And Corinne, you mentioned Dr. Brownstein's book. If you could be more specific about how you, I love Himalayan pink salt, sea salt, but if you could give us some practical pointers about how we take salt with our water and our liquids, I'll listen over the air if you have my question.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Very nice question. And I'll bring Dr. Deckel in also. What I found is that when people are detoxing or when they're in severe diets and their energy goes down, if you take a little salt and you put it under your tongue, it's like you've been given an amphetamine. You come back alive. And what has happened is you've supported your adrenals. Your adrenals need some salt. And when you're on a detox or a very severe diet, very often you're not getting enough salt. And Dr. Deckel, you really know Himalayan salt.
Yes, that's the that's the only salt that I use. By the way, this is a great point that you brought up as far as you're not sick, you're thirsty.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with a premise, a very simple premise. The majority of us walk around dehydrated. The reason is very simple. By the time we feel thirsty, we're already dehydrated. Studies have shown that dehydration is as little as 3%, okay, because 70% of our cells are water, okay, give or take. 3%, which is not a lot out of 70, 3% decline in water content of our body already gets us into a dysfunction, okay? Now, how big is the dysfunction? Depends on our age, state of health, and other many, many, many factors. But the fact of the matter that 3% dehydration, which is almost imperceivable, can get us into trouble. The remedy for which can be, okay, I'm going to take some more water with minerals and I resolve this issue. I mean, it's very inexpensive, very affordable, and very applicable, and very, if not difficult to do. Because most people walk around today with a bottle of water. Well, the question is it just water or you put something in it to make it really good supplement that the body really wants? So I agree with the statement. A lot of us are dehydrated. A lot of us don't know it. And really, when you say, well, how much, what is formula? Well, most formulas that you hear as far as how much water, take your body weight in ounces and divide it by two. So if you weigh 150, 75 ounces of water should do. That's crude, but usually it will apply to most people. What do you think about it, Corinne?
I think we're running out of time right now.
Okay.
I think it was a great question. I think I've really had fun. It's always a pleasure having you and sharing this time with you, Dr. Deckel. And it's always fun when the audience joins in and enlivens and broadens the conversation. So this has been Take Charge for Your Health, and I'm speaking with Dr. Moshe Deckel. And Dr. Deckel, how can we get a hold of you?
Well, it's not difficult. They can find me online. I have, videos online. My office number is 843-422-8328. My email is Deckel, D-E-K-E-L, M-D, medical doctor, at Gmail. Very easy to get in touch with us. And, we're here to take care of our people. So feel free to connect with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing this time with me and your insight. It's wonderful to have a focused, holistic insight looking at very common problems or even situations that people don't even realize are problems. So I'm Corinne Fornari, and we will be seeing you next week. Thank you, Reggie, for your help today. It was priceless. And back next week. Bye-bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. President Joe Biden says he strongly disagrees with the Supreme Court's